Now will you notice chapter 4, for it continues this. He says here, verse 1, "So I return and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of their oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter." Does this sound to you like any political philosophy today? The egotist, he rebels against the establishment. He's opposed to it. And that whatever exists, whatever is the ruling, is always oppressing the poor. And the poor, very frankly, always get a bad deal. That's no question about that. But that they're being oppressed. And here's where your protest movements all begin at this particular juncture. Now listen to him again. He says, "Wherefore I praise the dead, which are already dead, more than the living, which are yet alive." You've heard that one. "I'd rather be dead than alive. I wish I were dead. Better to be red than be dead" is just turning it around, looking at it the other way. He rebels against the establishment, and he at the same time wishes that he was dead. Death seems to hold no terror for him whatsoever. Now will you notice, he goes on to say, "Yea, better is he than both they which hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun." And here's the other side of the coin. "I wish I hadn't been born." It's better for the ones coming along not to be born. Then verse 4, "Again I considered all travail and every right work, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit." And the interesting thing about this is he protests against the establishment, against the oppressor, against that which is wrong. But what about it? What about the man doing right? What about the man who is trying to? Well, that's no good either. You're wasting your time in that field. I tell you, this is really a pessimistic viewpoint of life. "The fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh." What does that mean? Is he cannibal? No. It means that actually he's not willing to do anything to protect himself, won't work for himself. We have developed quite a society like that today. Want everything given to him. Now will you notice verse 6. "Better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit." Now, very candidly, you get in some good points here. I would say this is a very good point. This man here, of course, he wants to do his own thing. But it's better to have it that way than to have it the other. Verse 7, "Then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun." Any way you go, it's wrong. There's no way out. This is the worst kind of pessimism. No wonder that in Berkeley there have been more suicides in that area than in any other place in the country, because we've seen the old sore. We've seen it break out with corruption and ooze out this corruption. What's back of it? Well, this philosophy that leads to suicide. All of it. It comes to naught. Verse 8, "There is one alone, there is not a second. Yet he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity, yea, it's a sore travail." And what a picture this is. Why, even if you work for somebody and you've helped them, you're just wasting your time. And he says now, "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor." Now, he's giving reasons why you ought to team up with somebody. And this is the only reason. Why? Well, it's going to be a pretty selfish reason. You knew that. Two's better than one, because they have a good reward of their labor. You'll have more by teaming up with someone than you would if you did it by yourself. So that's the reason you should team up. This is the philosophy of life that's known as egotism. Now, as we come in chapter 4 to verse 10, he has made this discovery that if you attempt to just live for yourself, it doesn't mean you can go it alone, that you do need some to help you, some to stand with you. And he made the discovery that you need to team up. And he says in verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. That is, you can do many things together that you could not do alone. Verse 10, for if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. That's the reason it's a good thing if you're going on a hike even, that two of you go on a hike, that one would be able to help the other in case of an accident. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth. And that is the reason that today it's well to have someone around, someone look in on you. I hear constantly here in Southern California, where we have so many retired folk, of someone who lives alone and they fall, break a hip, can't get to the telephone, or maybe don't have a telephone. And maybe it's a day later, 2 days later, that a neighbor looks in on them. It's better that two be together, because if one falls, the other can render help. And then verse 11, again, if two lie together, then they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? And I remember as a little boy, I always liked to sleep with my dad in wintertime because he'd warm me up, you see. It's cold, and very frankly, the house we lived in wasn't too warm to begin with, and we slept in a room that was unheated, and it made quite a difference. And there's a poem today. I thought I could put my hand on it. I'd like to give it to you, but I cannot because I can't locate it. It must be with some other papers of mine. But it says that it's best that two go together and that one can warm the other, one can help the other. And that's so important, I think, in life. Now, verse 12, and if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. And by the way, two is company and three is a crowd. Sometimes it's well to have the crowd, especially if someone comes against you and you're not apt to be even held up today if there's several of you walking along. But one person is certainly the one that is picked out today. I'm told that even in Washington that no woman is permitted to go alone into a public restroom there, that always another must go along with her. Well, it's tragic that we live in a day when it's not even safe in the nation's capital and actually in the very building itself to go alone. It's a revelation that in spite of the fact liberals just don't like the term law and order, we do need a little of it today, and there must be a restoration of that. This idea that we are a civilized people, that we've lost our lost nature, and the theologians of long ago were dead wrong, that today we've improved man, and he must have liberty, and the liberty that's being exercised today is liberty to hold people up, liberty to mug them, liberty to say obscene things, liberty today to play music that no one wants to hear that has any mind at all. And as a result, why, the folk that have liberty to express themselves, but the majority of folk don't have liberty today. They can't walk the streets, and there are certain motels, hotels, that I won't go to because of the music that they put on, and they do nothing to tune it down at 12 o'clock at night because we must have liberty today. And I went to a manager of a hotel, and we had 200 people in his hotel in a tour, and I looked into the place where this music is coming from, and there were not six people sitting on bar stools. That's all that was there. And yet those six people had to have their liberty, and these three fellas, they couldn't sing any more than I can sing. And it's terrible when I tried, And it was terrible when they did it, too. And yet, 200 people had to be disturbed. So these folk, I would say to about 9 in all, could have their liberty. I say something's radically wrong. We've got this matter of liberty misunderstood. Liberty's not license. And after all, you have liberty to swing your fist. Well, where my nose begins, that's where your liberty leaves off. And we need to change these things some. And therefore, you need to have several go with you today anywhere that you go. And I've got so in conference work that my wife goes with me everywhere. I don't like to go alone, and that is something that many of us are finding today. Now, you can't be self-centered in this life, therefore, and find satisfaction in that. To say I want to be alone may work for a while, but you get very tired of it after a while. Now we read, better is a poor and wise child than an old and foolish king who will no more be admonished. And Solomon was both of them. He was a wise child, and he was a very foolish king. Now verse 14, for out of prison he cometh to reign, whereas also he that is born in his kingdom becometh poor. And the reason that we ought to be interested in what happens in Washington and in your state capital is because it's going to affect your living. And today that's what's making a great many people poor, because politicians are becoming rich, are becoming influential. And as long as people are protesting that, I'll go along with it, because the situation that has arisen in this country of ours, the corruption, is something that is wrecking business and is making a great many people poor, and retired people suffer from it. These are tremendous statements that are made here, and it reveals that God is interested in you. He's interested in you as a child, as you mature, as you become an old person, and he's interested in your welfare down here. This, I think, is something that needs to be considered today. Now, we read on here, and I read now verse 15, I considered all the living which walk under the sun with the second child that shall stand up in his stead. There's no end of all the people, even of all that have been before them. They also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Now, there are two things here that I'd like for you to notice. He says the second child is generally the one, and Solomon was the second child. He was the second child of Bathsheba, and he was not the one that David would have chosen to have been king. And Solomon apparently had noted that after all, Isaac was not the first son of Abraham, and that Jacob was not the first son, that God has a way of choosing the seconds. You feel second class today. May I say you're first class with God. Then the second thing to note here is, and I can bring this down to something very practical for us today, sometimes we have a very popular president, and then as time begins to recede from him, we find out what a second-class president he really was. When all the glamour boys get away from him, and the publicity man no longer heard, and the news media's no longer playing him up, and we begin to see that his time that he was in office did not bring any blessing to the nation, but actually it was a time of deterioration, a time when the nation began to go down. And so that's what he's talking about here. Apparently, God wants to give us all just a little consecrated gumption, and how we need that today.